Let's go ahead and get our Bibles open to 1 Samuel chapter 13. And let me begin today by restating my chronological belief regarding verse 1 of chapter 13. If you're using the English Standard Version, which we're trying to use this time through, then you'll see that there are some blanks in the verse. Saul was blank years old when he began to reign, and he reigned blank and 2 years over Israel. The translators of the English Standard Version see here in the Hebrew a formula similar to that which occurs later in the historical books. So they believe that there's some missing numbers. And I've told you many times now that when you're hand copying scripture, numbers and names are two of the hardest things to copy consistently. If you don't believe me, sit down and try to hand copy some long list out of the Old Testament that has numbers and names in it and see how well you do. I'm going to guarantee you, you'll make mistakes. So the English Standard Version people just leave the numbers that are not in the text out. New American Standard, on the other hand, along with others, have tried to supply numbers. And then they use their convention of putting the supplied information in italics. So when I look at New American Standard, the 1995 update, verse 1 says, Saul was 30, and that's in italics, years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40, that's in italics, 2 years over Israel. So they supply numbers that are not in the text, and they're guessing. And I think they are absolutely wrong when they guess like that, because Saul has an older son, a son old enough to be fighting when he is king. So it's not likely that he's going to be 30 years old when he starts his kingdom. The other thing is the 40 here may have been lifted from the book of Acts, chapter number 13, verse 21, where you have a speech that goes over the history of Israel. And they talk about here about Samuel the prophet being a judge, and that the people of Israel then asked for a king, and God gave them Saul, the son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, for 40 years. Now, that's how the typical English version of Acts 13:21 goes. I, however, believe that the 40 years is a reference to both the judgeship of Samuel and the kingship of Saul together, adding up to 40 years. So if they've grabbed the 40 years from Acts and put it here in 1 Samuel 13:1 and said that's the length of Saul's reign, then they believe that it was a rounding off. And so 42 years, they think, is the more precise thing. But it is assumptions made by human authors where information is not in the inspired text that we have at our disposal. So I believe that we can perhaps offer a different way of understanding this verse that I think matches the chronology quite well. And I gave it last session. Let me give it to you again. I believe verse number 1 of 1 Samuel 13 should read something along this line. Saul began to reign for a year. And when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose 3,000 men of Israel. So I believe this is a summary of Saul's first year on the throne, which would have run from the fall of his first year to the fall that kicked off his second year. The second year, once it began, sees Saul establishing his standing army, which Samuel had warned the people would be the case, that he would have professional soldiers surrounding him. He would not have a militia that he would always depend on, but rather have guys that were 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That was their job, soldiers. And that's the introduction in his second year, which means, as I said yesterday, that Saul goes bad really fast. He effectively has one really good military victory that we see in against Jabesh Gilead's defense, against Nahash the Ammonite. And then he decides to surround himself with men that he prepares to use against the Philistines, the enemy on the opposite side of the country. The Ammonites were on the east, Philistines are on the west. So let's see how his second year goes. Again, verse number 2. Saul chose 3,000 men of Israel. 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and the hill country of Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin, and the rest of the people he sent home, every man to his tent. So he's got a total of 3,000. He's got 2,000 of them that are apparently involved in some sort of operation at Michmash, which is southeast of Bethel, just a few miles. In fact, let me see if I can find out here. Check my map, see about how many miles that is real quick. Looks like it's about 3 miles, couple miles. So Michmash may have been one of the places that the Philistines had a trade outpost. And you remember I was talking about this idea that the Philistines had soldiers, a protective detail, a security detail, at these trading posts, which were effectively like a Philistine military post inside Israeli territory. So it appears to me that Saul is trying to empty the area near his home territory, here in the center of Israel, in the area of Benjamin tribe. He's trying to empty that area of Philistine outposts. So verse number 3 tells us that Jonathan is pretty much up to that exact same thing. He has 1,000 guys with him. Jonathan defeated the garrison of the Philistines that was at Geba. And this Geba, there is a Geba that seems to be across the valley from Michmash. But the spelling here is very, very close to Gibeah, which is the hometown of Saul. And we know that there was a military presence, a Philistine military presence, at a trade outpost of the Philistines at Gibeah. So I think that Jonathan may have kicked them out. But the key thing is the next phrase, and the Philistines heard of it. So Saul and his firstborn son, Jonathan, who is clearly of military age, they are clearing out the Philistine presence in Benjamin. And the Philistines find out about this, and they are not happy. So they will be coming up from the west into this area near Michmash, northeast of Gibeah. because that's the place where Saul had been operating. Well, Saul, probably at the direction of Samuel, leaves Michmash and goes east down into the Jordan Valley to Gilgal, the last place where he had been reaffirmed as king. So we read here in the middle of verse number 3, Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, "Let the Hebrews hear." And all Israel heard it said that Saul had defeated the garrison of the Philistines, and also that Israel had become a stench in or to the Philistines. A metaphor for the idea that the Philistines were planning to deal with the Israelis, because there are trouble now. And the people were called out to join Saul at Gilgal. And this is the Gilgal down in the Jordan Valley. We know that because language later talks about Philistines coming down against them and Saul going up from Gilgal. So it's got to be the Gilgal down in the Jordan Valley. This goes back to the day that Saul was made king by Samuel. He told him that day, some future date, you are going to go down to Gilgal. When you go there, you must wait 7 days for me to arrive and offer sacrifices. So this is now that time. Those words were given to him about a year or so ago, and now he should be remembering them very clearly. Verse 5, the Philistines mustered to fight with Israel 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen and troops like the sand on the seashore in multitude. So this is a huge military assembly of Philistines. They're coming up from the Mediterranean plain. They're going to come up past Beth Horon and up and over the ridgeline, not very far from Bethel, because they're heading for Michmash, which is where Saul did his first military operation against them. And as far as they knew, that's the last place that he was at. So they came up and they encamped at Michmash to the east of Beth Avon. Now, where's Israel at this time? Well, they are mustering their forces down in the valley of the Jordan, down slope from Michmash, a few miles. In fact, let's see, it's about, we're going to call it about 15 road miles, thereabouts. So about half day's march. So the Israelis are trying to get their structure of their militia forces together at Gilgal, while the Philistines are arriving at Michmash from the west. All right, next part, verse 6. When the men of Israel saw that they were in trouble, for the people were hard-pressed, we'll explain that in a moment, the people hid themselves in caves and in holes and in rocks and in tombs and in cisterns. So they see their country being invaded en masse by a strong Philistine military force. And their militia is not very much of a military force. And so these guys, some of them, instead of showing up for the militia call, they go hide, hoping that maybe they'll be missed by the Philistines as they come through. And not just that, verse 7, some Hebrews crossed the fords of all of the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. So some of the people, instead of showing up at the mustering place of Gilgal, they jump across the Jordan River to the east and hide out in an area that more than likely they figure the Philistines are not going to come. Now, Saul was still at Gilgal, and all the people followed him, trembling. He waited 7 days, the time appointed by Samuel. So this is the tie-in to the earlier story. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from him. So Saul sees that his people, his militia people, are scared. And even the ones that showed up for the muster call, now that he's waited a week for Samuel to show up, some of those volunteers have already run away. They've already crossed the Jordan or they're hiding out. So on day number 7, it's not the end of the day, but on day number 7, Saul said, "Bring the burnt offering here to me and the peace offerings." And he offered the burnt offerings. So what they were waiting for was for Samuel to come and act as the chaplain, as the prophet of Israel, the spiritual leader of Israel, to come and officiate at a great big sacrifice ceremony to bless the militia army before they went to battle, so that they would go with God. When Saul figures in his head, well, Samuel's not going to show up, and we've got to go. We've got to march back up to Michmash and take these guys on. I've got to get the religious ceremony over so that we can move. So he is jumping ahead of the very specific instructions that he has been given. So he is violating the instructions of God. This is the second year of his kingdom, understand. He is already thinking he knows better than God. Verse 10. As soon as he had finished offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. So right there at the end of the 7th day, before it became the 8th day, Samuel shows up, just like he said he would. Saul went out to meet him and greet him. Samuel said, "What have you done?" And Saul said, "When I saw that the people were scattering from me, and that you didn't come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines had mustered at Michmash, I said, 'Well, the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not sought the favor of he who is.' So I forced myself and offered the burnt offering." So he makes an excuse for himself. He says, well, actually, he makes blame. He says, "You didn't show up when you said you would," which actually he did. He just showed up at the very tail end of that period. He says, "And I knew that the Philistines are going to come down here and attack me, and I didn't want to be attacked until we had gotten God on our side through the sacrifice ceremony. So I made myself do this thing, even though I didn't really want to." And so Samuel said to Saul, "You have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of he who is your God, with which he commanded you. And for this, for then he who is would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue." So he will not have a dynasty. "He who is has sought a man after his own heart. And he who is has commanded him to be prince over his people, because you have not kept what he who is commanded you." So this is the first time that Saul is told about David. Now, he's not given a name. He's only told that somewhere out there, God already has somebody else that's going to do the right thing. Now, David is just a kid. A kid living down in Bethlehem, but he is a man after God's own heart already. And so Saul goes ahead and goes to war. Samuel arose, went up from Gilgal. The rest of the people went up after Saul to meet the army. They went up from Gilgal to Gibeah of Benjamin. So Saul takes his army, his militia, mustered forces, excuse me, back up into Benjamite territory to his capital city of Gibeah. Now, Gibeah is a few miles south and a little bit west of Michmash. So this is where the two armies are now starting to come into close proximity with one another. Rest of verse 15. Saul numbered the people who were present with him about 600 men. Now, this is bad. You remember when he went against Nahash the Ammonite, he had 300,000. Now he's only got about 600 guys left. Saul and Jonathan, his son, and the people who were present with him stayed in Gibeah of Benjamin, but the Philistines camped in Michmash. Now, Gibeah here, again, might be a slight spelling variation of Gibeah, but it's also a possible site located just across the valley from Michmash. Now, next part of the verse 17 says, raiders came out from the camp of the Philistines in three companies. One company turned toward Ophrah to the land of Shaul. That's to the north. So the Philistines are sending out little groups to pacify the area and collect supplies. Sends one group to the north. Verse 18, another company turned toward Beth Horon. That's back to the west, the direction they came from. So probably making sure that their connection to the Mediterranean coast is secure. And another company turned toward the border that looks down on the Valley of Zeboim toward the wilderness. Now that's to the east, down toward Jericho. So they are effectively making sure that they've got their position secured on the north, west, and east sides. On the south would be Saul and his very small militia force. Now, a little bit more information. Verse 19. Now there was no blacksmith to be found throughout all the land of Israel. For the Philistines said, lest the Hebrews make for themselves swords and spears. So during this period of time the latter part of the Judges and the beginning of Saul's kingdom, the Philistines had cornered the market on blacksmithing. They had co-opted the technological information for how to work metal. And this put the Hebrews in a very bad situation. It says, verse 20, every one of the Israelites went down to the Philistines to sharpen their plowshare, his mattock, his axe, or his sickle. Now, these are all farm implements that have metal components to them to make them work well. Well, the Israelites don't know how to make or work with those metal components properly because they don't have any blacksmithing information. The Philistines have all that. So the Israelis have been going to the Philistines for this technology. Verse 21, the charge was 2/3 of a shekel for a plowshares, for the mattocks, and 1/3 of a shekel for sharpening the axes and for setting the goads. Now, a shekel is probably somewhere around 2 days' wages. So you're seeing some pretty hefty cost involved here. Verse 22, the impact. So on the day of the battle, there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people with Saul and Jonathan, but Saul and Jonathan, his son, had them. Now, you might ask the question, what happened to all the stuff they probably captured from the Ammonites when they defeated them the previous year? And I don't have a clear-cut answer for you on that. It could be that the Israelis brought those implements of war and sold them to the Philistines in order to get credit for farm implement work. That might be part of the issue. It also could be that they didn't think to plunder all those places because they were a militia force. So they didn't think about having to go and fight again. But whatever the reason, the Israelis in this particular situation don't have decent weapons. Saul and Jonathan do, but everybody else seems to be functioning with farm implements as their weapons. Verse 23, the garrison of the Philistines went out to the pass of Michmash. And this is where we're now going to set up our story for tomorrow. When you go to the region, which you can, or you can kind of go to a map system that shows you the terrain, you will find out that this valley that is on the south of Michmash is kind of rugged and deep. And so the Israelis are on the south side of this ravine, and the Philistines are on the north side of the ravine. Jonathan, the eldest son of King Saul, decides that they shouldn't just sit around waiting for the Philistines to attack them. He figures they need to start the fight. So chapter 14, which is where we're going to spend our time tomorrow, says that one day Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let's go over to the Philistine garrison on the other side." But he didn't tell his father. Saul was staying on the outskirts of Gibeah in the pomegranate cave at Migron. So Jonathan decides to go to the front, the valley, the deep ravine that is between the Israeli territory and where the Philistines are encamping, and he's looking to get the fight started with God's help.